Mainstream Mental Health Radio
with Dr. John Huber.
What do you think you are, crazy or something? Well, you're not.
We're on a mission from God.
News, issues, revolving around mental health.
Dr. John Huber, a mental health professional for over 20 years, the chairman for Mainstream Mental Health, a clinical forensic psychologist, and a psychology professor at Texas State University. Breaking the silence of mental health, one day at a time, discussing the human condition, providing a sounding board for mental health issues, and making mental health mainstream.
You got a gift, my friend.
Now it's time for Mainstream Mental Health Radio.
Let the healing begin.
With Dr. John Huber.
Many of our listeners probably want to know how they can get along better with their kids. Well, our guests today, Dr. Kevin Sell and Austin Sell, have been able to increase their bond by living for 5 years as college roommates. And Dr. Fell got his PhD in psychology, and Austin had an amazing transformation from a high school dropout, a felon, a suicidal teen, to a college grad, a loving dad, and now a thriving professional with a clean record. I'd like to welcome today to our show Dr. Kevin and Austin Fell. Hello, guys.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us.
And if I may be so bold, it's Fall, F-A-L-L.
F-A-L-L. Oh, okay. Well, let's just start over and do it that way then. I don't want to get it wrong. So.
Okay, we'll do it again.
No, that.
So that. And 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Many of our listeners probably want to know better ways to get along with their children. And our guest today, Dr. Kevin Fall and his son, Austin Fall, increased their bond by living for 5 years as college roommates. Dr. Fall got his PhD in psychology, and Austin had an amazing transformation from a high school dropout, a felon, and a suicidal teen into a college grad, a loving dad, and a thriving professional with a clean record. I'd like to welcome to our show today Dr. Kevin Fall and Austin Fall. Welcome to the show, guys.
Hey, great to be here.
Yeah, we're so glad to be here.
You know, your story is just amazing, first of all. My practice is as a clinical forensic psychologist, and I deal with felons and a lot of people in incarceration, and to watch and to see how you've been able to work together. And Austin, I can't tell you how proud I am of you, because I work with so many people who are like, you know, what can I do? How can I get out of this? And you found a way, and, you know, your dad helped you and he grew out of it too. So I think I kind of want to start with Austin first. Can you kind of tell me where you were at before you guys decided to do this, and what the decision-making process was like for you to decide to take this step? I mean, you know, this is a pretty major thing. And then to do it with a parent, that we all know how much stress that can be in and of itself.
Yeah, absolutely. And given the burden my father was under with working two jobs and, trying to obtain his PhD at the University of Iowa was no small task when you factor in how poor a shape I was. Depression runs in my family, and I was growing really depressed. And in rural Kansas, is not the best. It's not like the epicenter of mental health in the world. So really didn't know what was going on. And here I am, this big, strong guy, and I'm, you know, some days I'd be crying, and I'd be, what's going on? This is just not right for me, or this just isn't stereotypical for me. And so I was working kind of this, living in a town comprised of 5,000, and working at this brick factory, and it just got to be overwhelming for me to the point where I started vividly considering suicide. And I was too much of a coward, and I did not want to face the afterlife knowing I destroyed my parents. So I reached out to my already overworked dad, and we began to totally transform my life.
Well, and that must have been very hard too in the first place, to go to a parent and say, you know, I'm this is what I was thinking of, you know, and help me make this change. Even though, you know, our parents are supposed to be the people who are always there to protect us and help us, sometimes they're the ones we don't want to hurt, even, you know, with the emotionality behind that. We don't want to make them think they're a failure too. So I really commend you I really do commend you on that, Austin.
Well, thank you.
Well, Dr. Fall, that must have been, you know, for lack of a better phrase, kind of a kick in the head. What, you know, what were you going through at that moment when he comes to you and says, hey, this is what's going on in my life?
That's a great description of it, a kick in the head. I'm through my first semester in my PhD program. Like Austin said, I was working two jobs, working 80-plus hours a week, and Austin calls me. Of course, it's his father. I was going to respond. I wanted him to come live with me, but I didn't know how I was going to accomplish it. We had tried this earlier, probably several years earlier, and it just didn't work. Austin wasn't ready to make the changes he wanted or needed to make, and it failed. And so when he called me, we had a very frank and honest conversation about how is this going to work? I'm not going to be able to, as a father, I'm not going to be able to pull you through this. You're going to have to do this on your own. I'm going to be there for you, and we're going to work together. And I, of course, cast a bright vision for him. But I was scared to death of how am I going to accomplish all this? Absolutely.
Well, you know, you started to say something that I think is really important, you know, as both of us being mental health practitioners, in my understanding, you know, that you know, it's where he needed to be, but he wasn't ready yet. You know, he wasn't at the point where he was willing to commit to that. And that's one of the big problems I think a lot of parents have, you know, when they have a child who's struggling with drugs and alcohol. And sometimes, you know, that you know, the failure launch kid who's just stuck on his PlayStation and can't do anything. They don't see a problem, or they're not really in a bad enough place to say, okay, I have to do this now. And a lot of people throw their kids into interventions and all this, and they end up depleting their resources before the child is actually ready to make those changes. And I think that's very important for people to realize.
You know, that's a great point. In our book, How to Get Your Son Back, that's why our focus is on parent change, not the kid change. And, you know, several years earlier, I come to my own awakening and I did my own introspective work, and I carried a lot of shame as a father because I had passed down to Austin generations of abuse that I got from my parents and they got before that. And so Austin was like all the other males in our family. He had this extremely low sense of self. And the whole remarkable thing about this, Dr. John, is a lot of psychologists would have, at a minimum, saw antisocial traits in Austin, if not the whole diagnosis. And, you know, we both know, and maybe the audience to a lesser degree, the antisocial diagnosis is extremely hard to work with. And that's one of the background stories that is so remarkable about his comeback.
Well, you know, and that diagnosis, you know, sometimes we're in situations like when I do assessments for the courts, and I look at individuals who the courts are saying, you know, is this person going to be a threat to society? He's about to be released. And, you know, they come back with that antisocial personality disorder because, you know, I have to give them what I find. I can't, you know, cloud that. But then I have to preface it also that doesn't mean that they're going to be harmful, because all of this stuff is historical data. It doesn't mean they haven't made a change. And I have to preface that with the judges and the attorneys. And it's a problem. I mean, I'm getting ready to go to court in a couple of weeks with another person who, you know, who we're looking at that exact same thing. And technically that's the diagnostic, you know, impression that they make. But I also have a history of about 9 years where, you know, they have changed. They've been in prison for quite some time. But those last 9 years show a totally different person when he had the opportunity to continue being that way. And it's hard to explain to people that this is a snapshot in time. It's not necessarily who they are. It's what they've done.
Right. That's a great way to put it. But, you know, I think we're at a parenting crisis now. Teens, the colleges are reporting that anxiety is the number one
problem. The majority of students feel overwhelmed with all they have to do, and we're in a parenting crisis where some things need to change, and the way we parent, I believe, a good number of us need to change, and that's what we're hoping to help parents do, especially when their teen, we start to see them go off the rails a little bit.
Well, and I agree with you on that. I mean, if we look at the millennials, they have the highest suicide attempt rate of any previous generation. The next one is some four percentage points below them, and that's significant when we're talking about a whole generation of people. And you know, it doesn't look any better when you've got you know close to 30% attempting between the ages of 13 and 18 today. There's definitely something that needs to change, and I think a lot of it comes back to the parents. I'm not trying to blame, I'm trying to fix. So
right.
You know, let's not be accusatory here. Let's say we need to do things different because we're the parents responsible for these individuals.
Yes, and that's why I was the first one to change. I knew I needed to change. But yes, there are good parents doing their very best, and
right.
What we're recommending is kind of non-intuitive, but it's very successful.
Well, and you know, I get parents and kids in my office all the time, and they go, "My child's got all this stuff," and I sit down and I look at their parenting styles. I'm like, "This." I send the kid out, bring the parent back in. I say, "Okay, you don't like the way he's behaving. You need to change." And they're like, "What?" I go, "Well, you can't force somebody to change, but you can change, and through your change, your child will respond to you differently."
Exactly.
It's sad, but I mean, you know how many patients with their parents never come back because the parents, "No, I'm not the one who needs to change. My child's got the problem," and they just don't get it. And I think for you to write a book like that is not only brave, but I think it's accurate and on the nose right there.
We certainly appreciate that. And one of the things as a son, I can say it was so powerful for me was not really any lecture in particular, but actually watching my dad not just go through the motions, but fundamentally change his approach to life. And
Kevin, do you have a different perspective on that or?
No, I Austin and I worked hard, and one of the commitments I made to he and his brother when I turned the corner as a parent is I really work on the heart connection, my heart to them, an authentic relationship of trust. And by establishing that, I went from being a coach on the sideline with a clipboard yelling at my players to putting on a uniform and getting into the game of life with them and being the team leader, leading by example. And with their trust of me, we could have the tough talks. Austin and I have had some very tough talks. Now, we haven't fought because that fighting is using unproductive words. We've had very, very serious stern talks, but they've all been productive. And that was my goal is, you know, there were times where Austin asked me if I was doing okay. I remember failing an exam and laying on the couch. And he said, "Dad, are you okay?" And I said, "You know, I think I need to go see a therapist. I need help."
Wow. Well, you know, and as I hear your story, I'm a child of the 80s, and I sit back and I think of Rodney Dangerfield and Back to School. And there had to have been moments when y'all were like, "What are we doing?" You know, and you know, I'm also a clinician who believes that laughter is probably one of the best ways to alleviate stress and get everybody focused back on what's really important in life. So did y'all ever have a moment like that when you were just like, "This is insanity"?
Oh my gosh. One of my favorite stories to talk about is Austin had dropping a math class, and I was burnt out and pissed off at life. And I was lecturing him about how he wasn't putting full effort. And if he would have, he wouldn't have dropped the class. And he stood there and he goes, "Dad, I wish you could experience what it's like to be me for 5 minutes. My anxiety is so high." And it was like I got kicked somewhere else other than the head. How can I miss this? You know, just listening and saying that, that was a big punch in the guts for me of how I was, how I had missed this and our honest communication. But there were times where Austin came by my room and asked me if I had showered properly that weekend. I had studied all weekend. So we had a lot of laughs.
Cool. Well, and I think that also brings up, that also brings out another point that a lot of us, especially as parents, we're listening to criticize instead of listening to heal or to actually just hear what our children are saying.
Oh my gosh, yes. That's the problem. One of my big focuses is on the emotion of shame and this feeling of being defective, or for me, it was being a bad parent for years. And Austin carried the same shame. And it's not so much the feeling of shame that really costs us in our relationships. It's the defenses about defenses to protect us from feeling that shame.
Right.
So if I would have had a shame reaction when he told me, "I wish you could feel what it's like for me to be in my skin for 5 minutes," a shame reaction would have been, "I don't care what it's like. All you need to do is sit down and study." And thankfully, I was able to back away from the shame reaction, and we were able to connect as adults in a constructive conversation.
Now, Austin, that leads me to a question that thinks, was there, you know, when during this process of being with your dad and going through and working on your bachelor's degree, did you have this epiphany that say, "Hey, this is going to work. I'm making this"? Was it the day you graduated and walked across the stage, or, you know, I want to imagine that somewhere between day one and graduation it happened. It wasn't the very last moment, but can you tell me about that?
What really started to happen was I saw my dad talk about how excited he was about helping people in the future, and I had some really lousy friends in college. We all kind of used each other for just this great time. You know, we'd laugh at one another or something, go out and drink at the bars. And I really got to, my friendships kind of really started to show their true colors. The bar scene became not so fulfilling. And it was because my dad, he valued our relationship more than just being right and telling, you know, kind of having a domineering posture and saying, "Oh, I'm right." He didn't do that. But he really showed me a way to live a much richer, fulfilling life of helping others. And I was really drawn to it and attracted to it. And there was one day I can remember just comparing my friends, the track that they were going down and the track my dad was going down, and all the sacrifices he had given, or everything he sacrificed essentially to have me up there. And that's when I thought, you know what, I'm going to start doing some things differently, cutting some friends out of my life who don't need to be there.
Hey,
and
Austin, I do apologize. I do need to interrupt. You're fading in and out. Can you please talk closer to the microphone and we'll do a countdown again, sir?
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that.
Okay. Here we go. Making sure we have this. And 3, 2, 1.
So I think a big turning point for me was watching my dad succeed in life and talk about his goals of helping others. And I compared that to the life I was living with the meaningless friends. I was no better than them, but we all used each other for such a great time. And yet nobody really cared about other people. It was just all about laughs. And my life just felt so meaningless compared to my dad. And so I was drawn to his lifestyle of living a much richer, fulfilling life with the meaning behind it. And so that's when I really started to change and cut friends out of my life who didn't need to be there.
And that's really important. You know, we always talk about, you know, people who are struggling with their addictions and how they need to try and find different friends that they want to be around. And, you know, that's a struggle for me as a therapist. It's hard, you know, because they know what they know. They've habituated. They look for certain things in people. And, you know, when I have a client who actually does start developing a new set of friends and their world starts coming together, I know it's very rewarding for me. I cannot imagine how that was for your father as he watched that process taking place. And so that's kind of my next question for you, Kevin, is did you see that transformation happening, or was it you wake up one day and it had happened and you kind of, you know, not noticed it until it was there?
That's a great question, and I think it's an important one for parents to consider. You know, there are some kids that experience these light bulb moments and they turn the corner, but I'd like to suggest that it's a more gradual change. Our teens didn't get the way they are overnight. They got there over a matter of years. And for Austin, what it was is it was looking at the big picture, particularly his thought process. And, you know, I'd hear him at first, you know, I was scared to go out and, you know, he just changed his whole life coming to Iowa. He was afraid to go out, and then watching him make some moves and in life, like enrolling in school. But then I saw him, we'd have conversations where he'd say, you know, I'm starting to see this party life isn't the life I should be pursuing. And instead of me going, oh, well, it's about time you figured that out, I've been telling you about that for years, I just kind of let him have his own journey. And that's a slower, it's like turning an aircraft carrier instead of a speedboat. And so I think that is a very important consideration for parents, is this good, deep, profound, and lasting change doesn't happen usually instantly. It's a gradual soaking in.
And I believe that 100%. I tell them it's not flipping a light switch. It's a process. And, you know, usually what I feel when a parent comes to me and says, you know, I just woke up and I saw this different person. And I'm like, you know, you haven't been involved enough with what's going on with your child. And we need to find a way to fix that. So I appreciate you bringing that up and putting that forward. As we kind of to move forward, maybe this is a good time for you to kind of plug your website and your book a little bit, and where can my listeners get that and that kind of stuff.
So our website is Life Doctor, Doctor spelled out, and so lifedoctor.com. They can get the book from there. It's called How to Get Your Son Back: 7 Steps to Reconnect and Repair Your Relationship. And also Amazon's a great, anywhere should have it if they ask for it, but Amazon's like a really prevalent area that people are getting our books.
Yes.
So I really highly recommend parents read. I really think they're going to benefit from the content in it. We really poured a lot into this, and it's all in the name of helping others. So.
Awesome. Awesome. And, you know, do you do public speaking, or are you available? Like if my listeners have questions, can they contact you, email you, anything like that?
They absolutely can. In fact, we both offer parent consulting, and the best way to get a hold of us is info@lifedoctor.com. We do a lot of speaking. In fact, we just spoke at the Missouri Mental Health conference, excuse me. And so we do a lot of speaking, and that can be arranged through the website as well. Again, it's info@lifedoctor.com.
Excellent.
It's our email address.
Excellent. Well, if you had one lesson that both of you, Kevin as a parent and Austin as a child, you know, was there one lesson that you would like to give to the parent respectively and the child, if you see a situation like this that sticks in your head, you know, that you just wish every child and parent knew?
Mine would be to the parent. I would say it's much better to be an effective parent than correct about something, because you can be correct and totally push your kid or your son or daughter away. And so I would definitely focus on cultivating a good relationship as opposed to being right.
Okay.
Very closely related to that is I want parents to understand they have so much more power than they realize. And I'm talking to parents who are hitting their head against the concrete wall and saying, I'm not getting any change. By engaging in your own introspection and being authentic with your teen, you're going to gain a lot through the attachment relationship. It's the most powerful relationship we have. And as parents, we have full access to that if we give up the being right and we start living an authentic life with our teen.
Wow. And what message would you guys have for the children?
You only get one shot at life that we know of. And so these friends who seem like they're your friends, if they're a negative force within your life, I beg you to cut them out of your life, because time goes by so quickly. And as I know it's cliche, but it's so true. And you've got to fill your time up with productive activities and people, surround yourself with people who want you to go maximize your potential.
And I have a very clear message for teens. Your number one priority above anything else is seeing yourself as a valuable being, a lovable, valuable human being. Because once you can live from that solid foundation, everything from psychological to spiritual to relational begins to fall in place. Otherwise, it's going to be shaky, all three of those, the spiritual, the relational, and the psychological. So it's developing a great self-image.
Well, I think those are very important things on both sides, for the parents and for the kids. And you both know, you know, the struggle I have and you have, I'm sure, is that getting them to hear that message, not just to listen to it, but to actually hear it and absorb it and understand it. And that's why people like us are around. Hopefully we are able to do that a little better than other people. So,
absolutely.
Well, I definitely believe that you guys have a lot of important work to do still in life. I mean, this is something that I don't see going away, and I really do appreciate you coming on our show and being part of it and being part of our community, and thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much for having us. It's been a pleasure.
Yes, the pleasure's been ours.
Well, thank you. Well, that concludes our show for today. And I'd like to, again, thank our guests, Kevin Fall and Austin Fall. And I want to commend them on their struggle. It sounds impossible to a lot of my parents. I can tell you right now, they're going to sit there and listen to this and think that this is impossible. But they're living proof that you can do this and your children are worth it. And I again want to commend them. I can't say enough how impressed I am and happy for them both. Thank you for being on our show. It's a great message, a great story to tell. And I look forward to seeing how this plays out and getting a copy of your book and sharing it hopefully with some of my patients and everything else. So again, that concludes our show for today. Thank you all for listening. This is Dr. John Huber on Mainstream Mental Health Radio. And remember that life is what happens while you're making plans, so buckle up.
Thanks for listening to Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber. Check us out on social media, Google+, Mainstream Mental Health, Instagram @ Mainstream Mental Health, Twitter @ Mainstream MENTL, and search for Mainstream Mental Health on Facebook. Please tune in every week to Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber.